When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to a Monday, June 27th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Most Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Apologize for the kind of 2-day delay here on pods. We taped this a few days ago here on the podcast, but kind of was out of commission for a little bit, dealing with a little bit of sickness here in the household. So trying to get over that and get started on this Monday edition. So sports reporters who have indeed reassembled over the weekend. So glad we were able to still get that in earlier and talk about all things NBA draft. Yeah, there's just a lot of NBA takes that we had to talk about, and the Knicks and their pursuit of Jalen Brunson, and the Hawks, what they do with John Collins, and NBA draft winners and losers and all that kind of stuff. So Andrew Hammond, Troy Free Press, and Bob Silverman of the Daily Beast on this pod at this time, as they do every single week. So thank you to them for making the time per usual. Don't forget, folks, you can check us out on YouTube. Oh yeah, we're over on YouTube, youtube.com/chasemostpodcast. Like and subscribe, check out all of our video content over there as we continue growing out the video channel for the show. Visit us at chasemostpodcast.com, the headquarters, access to all my previous episodes and all that good stuff. Read me all kinds of pieces over at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Writing a bunch over there this summer, so check me out at sportsrenaissanceman, that's me, .substack.com. Type an email and become a subscriber today. That easy, that simple, would be great. So I would greatly appreciate it. As always, you can tweet at me at Chase_Thomas and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. And as always, you can email this very program at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Reporters, who have indeed reassembled. Oh yeah, is that? Hold on. Is that Bob Silverman? Is that?
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Andrew. Hi.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm
Andrew,
doing all
right. Can you believe that's Bob?
Honestly,
it's like in sports, we're going at it as hard as we
honestly,
can.
I thought
can we do this bit? I want to do this bit every week.
I thought it was the sexiest man on earth, but then I realized that's Bob. And then I was like, Bob is the sexiest man on earth.
I like that.
I'm the sexiest fake Brooklyn Jesus man on earth. It's true.
You could pass for one, and I'm not going to lie, it would work. Like, I want to put like you in a robe, and then put Jesus, and then in parentheses, Rob is my homeboy.
Both Jewish. It's just a
see
transition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi guys. Thank you. That was lovely.
I'm going to do this every week. It's going to be motivation to keep this thing moving.
Even if we're, I just want to pivot to the fact that Andrew's 6'4". For my entirety of my, I have never little inside how the podcast sausage is made here, folks, but the entirety of our recording experience, Andrew Chase and I have never been in the same room together. Andrew and I have never been in the same room together.
That's by law, by the way.
In the same physical location together. So my only knowledge of Andrew as a human being taking up physical space in the universe is this sort of small box right here, which I'm gesturing at badly. Mm. That's him to me. So finding out that he's got like, I don't know, like a what is it, a 6'10 standing reach? That's a whole new world for me.
What's funny is today I was at the store.
He's so happy about this.
No,
he's so happy about this.
No, it's actually something you said a 6'10 standing reach, and I literally had to get a because I always have my headphones on when I'm in the store. One, I like listening to either music or a podcast.
Oh, I get that, yeah.
And I don't like to be bothered.
Mm. We're on the same page.
And so this woman kind of pulls me aside, and I'm like, I don't work. Like, I'm looking at her like I don't work here, but they're noise canceling, so I don't even know what the hell she's saying. And so she's
you're
like,
doing hey, the, you're doing the can't hear you, I don't work here, go away.
Yeah, visually, I think I'm doing that, but I don't want to be an asshole about it. And so she says, hey, can you get that box for me up there? And it was like a refill. Like, I thought it was like an air filter, but it was like a kitty litter, like, refill box or whatever. And yeah, I literally just stood up, kind of moved it a little bit, brought it down, and her daughter is looking at me like, he's the tallest person,
he is the tallest
earth.
Person on earth.
Little does she know that I have the if I miss my first two shots in an open gym, it's not going to be a good day. So I would be very disappointing on a basketball court. But if I make my first two shots, I become a black hole on offense, and I basically become J.J. Redick circa 2005, where I'll just pull up from everywhere.
You know,
a lot of comps.
Really,
that's some Kendrick Perkins comps right there.
You know, hey, I'm a good 3-and-D guy. I'm a fantastic 3-and-D guy.
If you've ever wanted to have some, for your listeners here, if you'd like some insight into the basketball skills of some of your favorite writers,
yeah.
For years, I only went once.
Beckley Mason, number one.
Beckley Mason is a god among men, as long as the pool of men is basket bloggers.
Yeah, he's never missed a shot. Beckley Mason's a legend that these young hoop heads, these young hoop writers don't know about.
There was a game every year at the Sloan conference as well. There was a famous basketball game. Beckley would play in that. I played once very badly. But you know who has a killer low post game?
Who?
And is taller than you'd think? Rob Mahoney of The Ringer.
I can see that.
How tall is he?
Rob Mahoney has a very sort of Kevin McHale type back to the basket. I'm just going to grind you down, put you in.
So he's a fraud. He's out here writing about just the modern game of basketball, and he's in the gym just Kevin McHale.
He himself is practicing some of the more archaic and ancient arts. It's true.
The up and under Kevin McHale style. Oh,
I think he's 6'2", maybe 6'3", but he's got the kind of frame where once he establishes position, he's very good.
Wait, how tall are you, Bob?
5'9".
Okay. So I'm in the middle.
How tall are you?
I'll take that. I'm in the middle. I'm 5'11", and I can't say 6 feet because everyone looks at me and they're like, "You're not 6 feet," and I'm like,
"Oh, it's the 5'11" that you can't pass for 6 feet."
Yes, it drives me up the wall.
I do the 5'9" and say 5'10". I feel like I'm cool.
People are
going
to challenge you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. No one's going to be like.
But people challenge you on 6 feet if you're 5'11". They will challenge.
Yeah, that's the Rubicon that you can't cross. You can't you can't go to the number 6 if you don't hit that mark.
I'm in the sweet spot where it's like if you're between 6, I'm just on the verge of the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Especially as a journalist.
Hold on. As a 6'4 man, like you could say 6'3, 6'2, 6'1, 6'4, 6'5.
You can't get away with saying you're 6'4 or when you're 6'3 because I walk into a locker room and I'll see 6 foot to 6'4 point guards all the time, and I'm just like, you're 6'2" in the program. Okay, you're 6 foot. Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that program height.
Oh, it's a lie.
Completely bust them.
Some friends of mine from Texas were producing a play in New York in 2005, and somehow via various life connections, they were friendly with former Knicks point guard Charlie Ward, who I believe lives in the either Houston or Dallas area. Those are wildly different, I know, but he's in one of those Texas metropolises. Mm. And Charlie Ward came to see the play. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll say hello to Charlie Ward after the play. And I go up and I stand next to him. He's 5'11", tops.
Oh, absolutely.
Interesting.
Former FSU Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, Charlie Ward, listed 6'2". Jamie, look up the listed height for Charlie Ward, please. Thank you. Okay. We were practically eye to eye, Charlie Ward and I. And I'm having a nice conversation with Charlie Ward. We're talking about how he knows everyone from the play. And it's all I can do to be like, you're not 6'2".
That is a very Larry David, like, situation that it would be that they've built this up. And somebody you've known for the longest time, and at the end of the play, you know, he's gushing about how great it is, how everything is.
Yeah, and you just
look at him, you're like, you're not 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
And then you make an enemy for life.
Who was it?
What's the female equivalent to this? Like, men are obsessed with their men's heights, but, like, what is the female equivalent to this? Because women don't care about each other's heights. First off,
men are not obsessed. At least I don't feel self-obsessed with my height.
Men will challenge other men on their height and what they say. Like, that's not a woman thing.
I don't care.
According to the internet says he's 6'2". It's just a lie.
Mm.
I have seen Charlie Ward with my own eyes. We stood next to each other. This wasn't me seeing him from a distance or playing a game and going, huh, really, is he 6'2"? No.
Yeah.
Face to face. This close to Charlie Ward, this close to
Wait,
me.
Hold on. But men shrink as they get older. Charlie Ward.
He was like 2 years out of retirement. We're not talking about a 60-year-old man with osteoporosis.
I'm trying to help Charlie here. I'm trying to find
it's
reasons.
It's true. My father has really gotten a lot. My father is a lot older. He was never a tall man.
Mm-hmm.
The Silvermans as a whole are not
Are diminutive people.
Mm. I am one of the tall, at 5'9", I am one of the taller members of my, like, extended family, counting cousins and things like that. But my father's 5'7", or was, and now he's probably, like, 5'3".
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 5'4", maybe.
How tall is your mom?
Again, same thing, she was 5'5", and she's probably down to about 5'2".
Interesting. Mm. She's borderline not legally able to drive anymore.
She's not driving anywhere. Don't worry about it. Yeah. She's not leaving.
There was someone I went to high school with who I believe was 4'11", and you have to, like, for her to get her license, I think she had to, like, literally, it's legally required for her to have, like, some kind of tire or seat cushion.
Yeah, because you can't.
Yeah, you literally can't see. So, can you imagine? Hold on, guys. I got to grab my seat cushion.
I got to grab my hemorrhoid pillow before we hit the road.
Hey, Tammy, you going to drive? Okay, bet. And then we all get to the car, and she's, forgot my damn seat cushion. Oh, God, okay, fine.
Oh, man.
Imagine doing that, like, when you're trying to go, like, to a house party or something in college. Everybody's just like, oh, yeah, no, we're really excited. And then she's got to be like, hey, guys, hold on. I got to grab my seat cushion. It's upstairs. God damn it.
Yeah. That was, considering the height of my family, that was a terrifying thing to me growing up. I was scared that
being short?
I was gonna be a short king.
Mm.
And I turned. It was really.
Bob, you're just
really
a king.
Legit worry. Yeah.
So, there you go.
But. That was a very, it's true for boys who are, it's not easy being a preteen or a preteen boy when you're shorter than everyone. I mean, I don't know. Maybe in this new woke world.
Andrew has a timeout here.
Okay, we're getting a tall rebuttal here.
Either short or tall, it is hell.
No,
Okay, I'm sorry. Take it from a tall person. Take it from somebody who's above 6 feet. Chase.
Mm-hmm. Oh my.
Yeah. God. Yeah. Wait. Oh, you got that.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. No.
I'm 31. That doesn't bother me anymore. I'm good.
Are we gonna like open the onion of a middle school trauma? Or
no, you know what's funny? I went from like I learned to play basketball at like 5'2", 5'3". So I was playing AAU really small. So I learned how to play basketball small, and then I had a growth spurt way too late where I was like, where was this in 9th and 10th grade when I was getting the shit kicked out of me?
You had that growth spurt in 9th and 10th grade? See, mine just kind of like it was kind of like a home run ball that just keeps going up and up.
The linear progression.
Yeah. But the thing is, when you're in middle school and you're super tall and you're on the basketball team, you're still uncoordinated as hell anyway. Mm-hmm. It's a lifelong story.
But everyone expects you to be good all of a sudden.
Well, and it's – and yeah, you're expected to, you know, do this and do that. And for me it was, look – I'm trying to play positionless basketball before that was a thing. I still want my copyright, damn it. You know, because,
I can only imagine Andrew, the middle schooler, going up to his coach and being like, hey, I'm positionless. I don't know if you know.
I'm a stretch four, dude. Nah. Dude, I'm a stretch four, stretch five. I'm sitting here watching Kevin Garnett and Tim Duncan extend the floor a bit, little Chris Webber action. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, you're the tallest kid on the team. Get down the post.
You're playing in five.
which here's the thing. I didn't mind doing it. I enjoyed it. But yeah,
speaking
the expectations.
Typical body types in the NBA draft.
Yeah.
Huh? We're segueing.
That was Bob. Like, I'm done with the height conversation.
Bob doing a segue. Are we talking about the Knicks coming up short? Is that what you're talking about?
No, we're not getting to the Knicks yet. We're going to talk Kenny Lofton Jr., folks. We're talking Lofton.
Who I only
recently realized isn't the son of the former Cleveland and Atlanta outfielder.
How disappointed were you?
Very. I like the son.
The ages match up though. Like Kenny's been retired for a little bit. Marquise Grissom Jr. plays for Georgia Tech. So there's
a
lot.
I feel so cool.
Andrew Jones' son is the number one prospect in baseball. Drew Jones.
We discussed. Yep. But no, Kenny Lofton being whatever he is, 6'4", 285.
Yeah.
The Memphis Grizzlies really do exploit the atypical athlete body type bias to their advantage. Like, they've got some wide dudes on that team.
They've got
Xavier Tillman, yeah.
They've got it's like, we need fun-size basketball.
Yeah.
And it's like the variety pack. You get Ja Morant, this kind of sort of diminutive but explosive point guard.
A whippet of a guy.
And then you've got, you know, Steven Adams. Well, no, Steven Adams isn't there. Who's the big Aussie?
They got Kyle Anderson.
Wait, who are you talking about? The Grizz? No, the Grizz still have Steven Adams.
Okay, yeah.
He's still on the roster.
Because he was traded for Jonas last year.
That's right.
He was just hurt in the playoffs.
Yeah. But yeah, like, you've got all these like different odd body dudes that are just like in like this little variety pack. You're just like, guys, and they're actually good and competitive. And you're like,
they drafted my favorite player in the draft, indeterminately aged Jake LaRavia.
Oh, the Wake Forest legend.
The Wake Forest legend, Jake LaRavia, who, due to some strange error and glitch in the Google algorithm.
This is mid-90s AAU crap, by the way.
He was listed at age 22. And just as a matter of coincidence, when Jake LaRavia got this error cleared up so that he began listed on the internet as being age 20, he starts shooting up draft boards. I am very intrigued by this proto-Tom Gugliotta Memphis Grizzlies, of course.
Is
it Gugliotta and not Gugliotta? Is it not
Gugliotta?
No, it's Jake LaRavia. I'm comparing him to Tom Gugliotta, who played for the Timberwolves.
Why do you keep saying Gugliotta? Gugliotta.
Gugliotta.
Like Ray Gugliotta.
That's what I'm hearing too, Andrew. I'm like, what is he doing? Is he doing a bit? What is this?
I thought it was a bit.
Tom Gugliotta. over here in the past.
Oh, my God.
Jake LaRavia, over here. You conflated the two, not me.
Gugliotto is a...
Gugliotto sounds like a like an Italian olive oil company.
Yes. Hey, I got a Gugliotto.
And there we are, kids.
Goose. Yeah, like the goose is loose, the second baseman utility guy for the Braves right now.
I am excited by a unexpectedly mobile, good passing, good moving 6'8" big in the of the Tom Gugliotto school. Gugliotto, whatever.
I'm just selling all the Memphis stock. Like y'all can have all that.
They're great.
They're not. They're fine. They're just. When I see Ja Morant play 100-ish games in a row, fine. Like we'll
what, he just sort of flings himself into the air.
He just flings himself all over the place. It's just not conducive. It's fun to watch, but I don't think this is going to last long term. I don't.
He reminds me of early Iverson in that form of where he's just fearless at. Because I remember saying this,
but Iverson wasn't getting hurt.
Iverson didn't
go in for two-handed jam.
That's true.
But he was fearless around the basket.
Yeah, Iverson would mix it up with the big boys in the paint. Yeah, obviously.
Iverson
is quicker.
Yes.
And then more elusive, and Morant is just explosive and improvisatory in a kind of a different way.
And John Morant just doesn't give a F.
Yeah, that's why he's great. And that
I would say AI never did either.
He didn't, but the thing is, Ja will sit there and go, oh, I want to dunk this. Yeah. Iverson may maneuver around. Ja's just like, no, I'm going to dunk this. Like, Ja Morant's best dunks are the ones he sometimes misses. Like, there was one in the play. It was either in the playoffs or late in the season.
He got thrown an alley-oop. I think it was in the series against Golden State, and it didn't go. But it would have just...
That would have been, like, the all-timer.
Yeah, just trying to give the entire world a gas face. Speaking of explosive, undersized shooting guards.
Yeah.
Andrew Hammond. Thoughts on the draft that your Detroit basketball Pistons had, because I think they did real well.
Well, here's how we can frame this, too. As the Bob Silverman program comes to a screeching halt for 1 second. The winners and Bob didn't read the doc. He didn't read the doc. No,
that's
he's just
thing.
Like,
I don't read it.
Yeah, he's just running this thing.
I don't do it. I'm just going.
Here's how you do it. This is how we frame it.
I got it.
You're gonna like this. Is Detroit a winner or a loser coming out of it? Because we're gonna do our winners and losers now. And that, like,
Chase, you know, I hate this game. I hate calling people winners and losers in drafts because
Andrew, could you? No. How do I get moved?
Jamie, what did Bob say?
You.
Jamie, okay. What did Bob
so
say?
So here's. Here's why I say I hate the whole winners and losers. Oh, wow. That's rude. That's rude. I like how he's just doing that while drinking coffee. Like, oh, okay, children. No, here's my take on the Pistons draft. They needed to be aggressive, and they were. Like, they did. To me, it's did you accomplish everything that you wanted? Not some blogger in their apartment or not some podcaster. No offense, guys.
Work.
What about a blogger with a full house?
Sure, fine. Okay, whatever. We can pay attention to them, but outside noise in terms of what the team should do. Like, as long as the organization was in alignment on what they wanted, they accomplished their goals. To me, that's If you want to call it winning the draft, I call it a successful draft. I would say Detroit did. I would say Houston did. Houston.
I think Houston, kind of
like Detroit, were kind of given this opportunity, and instead of just kind of genuflecting and wondering, oh, should we do it? No, they just went right after it. They said, screw this. We're going to go after it.
No, Andrew, as a Michigan sports insider, do you have any insight as to how close Detroit may or may not have been to moving the fifth pick. They were receiving offers, according to James Edwards III, and other Vincent Goodwill said it as well. A lot of the New York beat guys said that Detroit was still considering moving the pick for a good stretch from round like pick 6 to about like 13.
I
was
think
still in play.
I think had
give us the inside dope.
So this is no inside dope, but I think in terms of what they wanted,
they got
where it was.
I'm of the opinion that a lot of people were still making calls with them for Ivy.
That is true. That is true because once they realized who they were going to get at 5, that's when that stuff started to kick up into high gear.
I think once they got him, there was almost, my highlight of the draft was all the crying lads. That was just, that cracked my foul, cynical heart. Like Jaden Ivey.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, Jaden Ivey, I was just like, oh, but no.
Yeah, Jaden Ivey, fucking,
The kid who got drafted by Milwaukee. I didn't know his story all that much.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, oh my gosh.
Marshawn Beauchamp grabbing them. Like the next day, they had an interview with Jaden and his mom, and Jaden broke like was still in tears. They gave Jaden uniforms that belonged to his parents and his granddad. I'm all here for the crying boys.
It's much better because you hear the stories about these young men, and yes, it's a part of the draft because for so long it was always analysis fit, how they do this, how they do that.
Yeah.
And then for a short while it was, we don't know who the hell these guys are, but we're gonna tell you and attempt to do it anyway.
Kirk still has no idea about anybody.
That's what I'm saying. Like that was like objectively one of the worst broadcasts I've ever seen for a draft, where it made no sense why.
Did you watch the ESPN feed? Because I watched the ABC feed. Because mainly I was just
what was the difference?
Stephen A. Smith complaining about the Knicks.
Oh yeah, I did watch.
Yeah, that. I saw that. That's fine.
But because I was just mainly because I had it on mute because I'm just looking because I'm working that night, so I'm just looking at pick draft monitoring. What Woj and Shams and everybody else is saying, and the people complaining about Woj and Shams, and I'm like, guys, they're doing their job. Congratulations.
Silencing the notifications from Chase and Bob as we live tweet the draft.
Yeah. Oh well, okay. So that part. I literally looked down. So, once again, inside baseball, guys. I looked down pre-draft. This is pre-draft. I looked down at my phone. There's like 3 unread text messages. I don't even know who they're from.
Mm-hmm.
But I, just put it down. And then I remember it was either right before or right after the Pistons went on the clock. And I looked at my phone. And there was 57 unread text messages.
We were having a lively chat.
I look up 1 minute, and for me, I was like, I know it didn't take. I know this draft didn't take. The draft took long, but I was like, I know it didn't take this long. I know it didn't. And I'm just like, oh, my God. And I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to.
I am very interested in, and this is a story that will probably never get told.
Mm.
As you all know, the night before the draft, the consensus was that Jabari Smith Jr. was going to go to number 1. That was the chalk selection for weeks.
Oh, we have that conversation now?
We're having this conversation. Everyone said Jabari Smith is going number 1, Chet's number 2, Banchero's going number 3. That was etched in stone.
Yeah,
and then the night before the draft, the betting markets flipped, and a lot of smart money, evidently.
WynnBet Bob is logged into the chat.
Yeah. Started pouring in for Banchero. So much so that when Woj had to post a tweet saying that no, actually it's still going to be Jabari Smith the following, I think, morning. A number of betting houses had to suddenly just stop, had to yank all the betting on who's going to be the first overall pick. I would love to know how that information got leaked and by whom and where that money started flowing in from. That
That story is kind of wild because Banchero never worked out for the Magic. Like, he never even came in.
No.
And they're just betting on... I mean,
think it's a good pick.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, people are just like, if you look at...
we got the body language experts?
Not the body language experts, but it's just like one of those things where, okay, someone has to be like, okay, majority of these guys are not going to work out. So just to be clear, like, who doesn't work out of this group? And that was something I was thinking about where everyone's just like, oh, Chet's going to be the anchor and Pau Gasol in Oklahoma City. Paolo's going to be Chris Webber. Jabari's going to be Rashard Lewis for whatever. And it's like, okay, all these guys, Jaden Ivey. Okay, here's the thing. Jaden Ivey, Keegan Murray, Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero cannot all be all NBA players. No. That's not how the draft ever works.
Odds are two of them will be good and the rest will.
Yes. So my, like, number one pick, I think the top three is probably, like, where you start. My top three, it's like Chet is, like, the modern Hashim Thabeet for me. That's where I'm at, where he is my modern Hashim Thabeet.
Wait. In terms of build or in terms of career?
Career.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was like,
it's like, you just take him because he was kind of an unknown, and people are like, there's some untapped potential. He was really good on that. He looked really good on that UConn team.
Look, the advanced metrics, it's not like it was with Thabeet where he was injured at UConn, but he's 7'2".
But that
team
was not built
together
around
to convince
Chet.
Enough people.
Like, it was a true Timmy tip situation.
But if you actually do look at... Look, I also have my doubts about Holmgren, but if you look at actually the evil numbers, if you dork it out and look at the metrics from when he played, they all suggest a player who is going to be very good.
Can't do it, man. All three can't. All three of them could not be great.
Here's my thing. Yeah. This was the debate that I had with a friend of mine, one of my best friends, about this during the season. I was like, is Chet Holmgren a product of what's around him? Is he a good player surrounded by very good players in a conference that's you aren't getting challenged every night? Like, the thing that impressed me about Jabari Smith a bit more than Paolo Banchero is he was challenged every single night because the SEC.
Andrew's saying that Jabari Smith has that dog in him. That's what he's saying.
A guy that I thought, by the way, my favorite draft, my favorite pick of the entire draft in terms of just entertainment purposes, was Walker Kessler going to Minnesota. Because I need Pat Bev to be his vet in camp. Because I need to see how long it will take for Pat Bev to crack when he's getting all those terrible dad jokes. Like, please tell me y'all saw that on...
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, this guy is perfect for Minnesota.
Walker is such a Southern white guy name. I've known a lot of Walkers in my life. Walker Kessler is, you know exactly where my man is from.
And the thing is, the guy just has this really insatiable, just really joy about him. And it's not funny. It's super genuine.
Well, I think Pat Bev is joyous. Like, if you watch his stuff, I think he's actually pretty chill. He was great on the JJ podcast.
Like Pat Bev is great. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, please pair those two together in training camp because Pat Bev is just going to look at him like.
Look, every generation gets the Cole Aldrich it deserves. Is what I'll say.
Well, that's the other thing too. Is like, which is your favorite Gonzaga star? And the NBA, who's your favorite? Is it Jalen Suggs? Is it Adam Morrison? Who is it? Is it Corey Kispert?
You're saying they can't, a player from Gonzaga can't be good, is what you're
saying. I am saying there is exactly, like, what, one player from the WCC that has been an all-NBA player in the last 30 years? And it was Steve Nash. Is that it?
All right.
Is that it? Am I missing one?
Fine.
I mean, vaccine knower John Stockton, but sure.
That was a while ago, though. But his son is more recent. Son, not in the league. His son was a Gonzaga player, too. I don't know, man. I'm not saying Chet's not going to be great, but I think if we had to pick between the three of who's most likely to just be okay.
The consensus is that Holmgren has, if everything works out, has the highest upside.
Yeah.
But you can absolutely slot either Banchero or Smith into any number of...
Bankera's going to be great. I don't think there's a scenario where he's not great.
Yeah. Great, I don't know about it. I think he will be a very
look at that
NBA
Magic history, number one pick.
Good NBA player for a long time. That is completely meaningless.
It means everything, Bob.
Just to turn it back to Detroit, I think getting Jalen Duren at 13 was...
Here's another problem with Detroit, though. This is something I think is interesting, and I want to get Andrew's perspective on this, is that you cannot develop five young lottery guys simultaneously. That's not something you can do. So you cannot... Which team's done it? Give me one.
The Oklahoma City Thunder?
Incorrect. Three. They had their three. That was it. And then you move on. You cannot
do...
But they also... They also had Jeff Green on that roster. They also had Nick Collison.
Nick Collison
was a high draft pick and a highly regarded player coming out of campus. They had five... They had, like, a lot of different guys. But it was still about three.
You develop three with a high usage. It was three high usage guys.
But here's the thing. The NBA is like getting younger.
Yeah.
The Pistons were one of the youngest teams in the league. Mm. You're left with no choice at this point, because what do vets either coming off that first or second contract want?
Yeah.
They want to win a championship. They want to be in a place where they can be competitive. And, you know, are they going to look at Detroit for that opportunity?
No.
More than likely not. So you've got to go young.
Well, I would just rather overpay for Kevon Looney than try.
You're just so wrong. That's wrong. You're wrong. Mm-mm.
No, you want a balance. Wrong. You want, for every Cade and Jaden Ivey, you want a veteran who knows what he's doing.
Balance. They have a $43 million cap space war.
Yeah,
you want to throw Stewart and Bay and Duren and Cade Cunningham and Ivy into the mix, and you will figure out which ones pop, and then when you are ready to win games, you can buy yourself a difference making.
No, you don't know when you're ready to win games. It's like one of those things. The sooner you get smart veterans around the young guys, the better, I think.
But here's another thing though. You've got a solid GM in Troy Weaver, Trader Troy.
Very solid.
Why do we know that?
Because look at the players he's got on the roster.
He hasn't done anything yet, and look at what he's done since he's been there. It's too early.
They won 23 games last year? I'm not going to vote him executive of the year. I'm just saying.
The Pistons were a talented, there was nobody. Mm-hmm. They had Killian Hayes, and that's it, two years ago.
Right.
They were a barren wasteland of a roster.
I am not saying either way. I don't have a definitive one. I just don't think we can say yet. We have no idea until some of these guys get a couple years older.
By the way, the guy who was the architect of perhaps the best, or one of the architects of perhaps the best Raptors run in their history so far. Oh yeah, he's the head coach.
Well, I think Nick Nurse probably wins.
You mean the same Nick Nurse that took advantage of not having to go through LeBron in the East, and then fine. No, all credit to Nick Nurse. Congratulations, you got your title. But
I mean, he still coached. Nick Nurse is a different cat. They weren't running the same defense.
Nick Nurse is still different.
I think Dwayne Casey's really good, but it's also I don't know.
Kyle Lowry isn't crapping the bed against the Cavs.
Dwayne Casey installs a structure.
Right.
He may not have a great deal of creativity in terms of offensive sets and things like that. But when it comes to figuring out a kind of replicable structure that young players can develop and flourish in, Dwayne Casey is an excellent coach for that stage in team growth. I think do you guys want to hear Mike Akin how the Knicks did on draft night?
Yeah.
It was a roller coaster.
I would like to hear, because Leon Rose just put out an Instagram post. Shout out to you, bro.
Did he really? Is he an Instagram guy?
Really? Or the team just posted something on social. I don't think they had a media.
No, they didn't. Leon Rose doesn't talk to the press.
I was going to say, he hasn't talked to them in a year and a half or something.
He talked to them twice in 2 years, and once was on MSG Network, so it was an entirely Knicks-controlled, not actual Q&A with Mike Breen. He had two conferences.
Okay, I got a quick, Bob, before you have your Knicks take, I have a sincere question. Why are the Knicks perhaps the flagship
Brad. Right there. Why are the Knicks? That's the question, right?
Like, why are the Knicks basically just the Kings with a Statue
More
of Liberty
money.
And Empire State Building attached to it?
Mm. Look, we've discussed it. They've got, I mean,
I'm just sick of it, dude. I'm not even a Knicks fan. I'm just sick of them being a laughing stock.
They do provide some lulls for everybody on draft night and a lot of other nights.
Also, booing that kid was rude, by the way.
Did they boo him? Did they
booed him.
Well, that's the other thing is, like, there was Malika on the broadcast was like a mixture of boos and cheers. And
they booed that kid.
Yeah, I was like, what are we talking about? Why?
That's true. It's like the Jets and Giants fans when they used to hold the draft at Radio City Music Hall booing the
But I'm sorry. Can you boo if you don't even know who that guy is?
I mean, they did it with KP, too.
Oh, I can't even go
Getting
to Google
out,
and get my New York dog. Boo!
Yes. You can do that.
Yeah.
That's why you don't win nothing.
There was something, the Knicksy part of what happened is the fact that they made a complicated trade and every single reporter had no idea who the players were or picks were who were involved for a good hour after.
Was that the Detroit and Charlotte?
That was the Detroit, Charlotte, Oklahoma City trade.
Okay, so can I talk about what happened on the Detroit end of that?
Mm-hmm.
Please.
Okay. Because, like you said, for an hour, nobody had any idea what was going on. But how it was being pushed out was, and this is from the New York angle, it was being pushed out from that nobody had any idea of what was going on. But we got the particulars because I was recording our voice briefings for the Detroit Free Press. Subscribe to the Detroit Free Press. And so
Wait, what is a voice briefing?
So it's kind of like the Daily for the New York Times.
Okay, I got you.
We do something like that.
Okay.
So for sports, Jaden Ivey gets picked. But as I'm about to record, like literally about to hit the record button, I see something pop up on my computer. Oh, yeah, there's been a trade. And so I'm just like, expletive deleted. So I'm catching up to everything that's going on. So we got the particulars. It took about 20 minutes. And so as I'm recording, finish it, whatever, I'm watching NBA media on TV talk about that trade. And it hadn't gone through. I don't think it had fully gone through the league yet.
No,
but
no, it didn't.
Like ESPN, national media, New York media are
new
trying
media
to figure
or old
out
media
are trying to figure out what's going on.
Fred Katz, who covers the Knicks for the Athletic, outstanding.
It was so embarrassing and
he,
funny.
He texted someone and trying to figure it out. He texted a plugged-in source. You can read this in his story. He texted a guy who he didn't name, but he said usually is very will be clued into what's exactly going on, and he goes, "So where is Dern going? Is he a Knick? Is he a Hornet? Is he in Oklahoma City? Where is he? What's going on?" And the answer back is, "Who knows? LOL or something." I didn't get the exact quote, but there were also some not clearly sourced rumors that dealing with the Knicks that evening was not the most frictionless experience, there were a lot of different voices in the
room. Sounds about right.
And so it was difficult.
Who's in the room, though? Is it World Wide West and Leon and who else?
I will point you to another story by Yaron Weitzman, who's at Fox News, Fox Sports now. And Yaron did a whole story about the process by which they drafted Toppin and Quickly a couple of years ago, and basically how the Knicks brain trust operates. And there's not a clear linear chain of command, I would say, is the way he describes it. Yes, like World Wide West, according to your own Weitzman sources, was like sitting there pounding the table, insisting that Quickly had to be the pick at 25. And he would not take no for an answer, and that ended up winning. Like, Leon Rose will be making the final decisions. William Worldwide Wesley has a very large presence, but so does capologist Brock Aller, and so do another of...
How long has he been there?
He was brought on when Rose came.
Okay.
And is generally well-regarded, at least reportedly. But there are, again, if you Google Yaron Weitzman, Knicks, Rose, Wesley, you'll find this article.
Yeah.
And it details a somewhat chaotic decision tree. So it's not surprising that it was not clear exactly who had the final authority on to sign. That was what some of the gossip that was floating around.
Who do you call first? Are you calling Leon first? Yeah.
Right. Who are you talking with? Do you go through some of his assistants?
Yeah.
Do you get Wesley on the phone? Who actually gives a thumbs up or a thumbs down on the trade? In the end, I just want to say this, though. Knicksy weirdness aside, by the way, it still doesn't top the all-time weirdest Knicks moment, which came during the Vegas Summer League in 2012, which was when the Rockets signed Jeremy Lin to a restricted free agent contract.
I remember this.
And the Knicks, Glenn Grunwald.
Yes. Been on the pod, friend of the pod.
Hid in a Vegas hotel.
Mm-hmm.
To try to avoid actually physically, because the clock doesn't start ticking on whether or not the Knicks get to match a free agent contract like that until the Knicks actually have the piece of paper with the contract in their hand.
Yeah.
And so because the Knicks were trying to convince the owner that it was a good idea to match the contract, and Dolan was at this point like thought that Jeremy Lin was too rude and didn't want to like match the contract. Yeah. Like, the Knicks didn't keep Jeremy Lin because he, like, asking for more money made Dolan mad, reportedly.
Mm.
And so, the Knicks brain trust was hiding in a Vegas hotel to avoid actually being presented with the contract.
That's wild.
But ancillary weirdness aside, there is... You can defend what the, I think giving up four. They ended up giving away four second round picks to offload Kemba Walker's contract.
Yeah.
On the one hand, that looked bad because they just signed Kemba Walker a year ago, and now they have to give up chips in order to get rid of him. That's bad.
And Detroit bought out his contract.
They're going to do that. So he's not sticking around.
The trade doesn't go through till July 6th, and at that point, they'll make him a free agent. But.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you can also argue, and I think you can credibly argue, that a front office that recognizes a decision and does what it needs to do to rectify the problem, even if that is that they don't buy into the sunk cost fallacy and they do what they need to do to offload them. Whether or not it should have cost four second round picks to get rid of an expiring $8 million contract is another matter altogether.
Right.
But they did. If you are in agreement that this draft is not a particularly strong one, and there were only a couple of guys that the Knicks front office liked, and those guys weren't available at 11, and you weren't able to, or didn't feel or felt that the cost was too high to trade up to get that guy, whichever that guy is, whether it's Jaden Ivey or reportedly Johnny Davis, who I'm not a fan of, but once the guys they liked were off the board. Getting three conditional late firsts for that 11th pick is also a very defensible move. And if they are going to get Jalen Brunson, which Mark Stein, very in his newsletter, also recommended subscription for you basketball heads, if they are, you can argue what the merits are to paying Jalen Brunson what looks like now $27 million a year.
Yeah,
which is what it's going to cost.
It's like 4 years, 100 and whatever.
4 years between 100 and 110 million is apparently the price tag for Jalen Brunson's services. Some might say locking $230 million of committed money into Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle is not the best way to build a good team.
It's the way to build Southpaw, too.
Yeah.
Psh, psh, psh. Andrew cannot
say what you will about the Knicks. Say what you will about the Knicks team building strategy, but at least it's an ethos. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what's the ethos?
I'm cleaning up a quote from The Big Lebowski for you.
Okay.
Yes.
If that is the plan, and they are able to get Brunson,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it is the best. I don't know if it is the best way to build a successful team, but it is more of an it is more of a clear direction than the Knicks have had in 20 years. Hmm. So,
yeah, I get that.
That, and look, you, again, there is a world where Jalen Brunson is like, has a similar career arc to Fred VanVleet, and you, what you now have is a guard capable of giving you 25 and 5, and that kind of a guard is worth $27 million a year for the peak 4 years of his career.
Yeah. You also haven't had a good lead guard in your
that
adult
part,
life.
The Knicks
that part.
Have not had a good talent. This will be the best Knicks point guard since, and Lynn, as much as I love Lynn Sanity, for 2 weeks does not count. Mm. This would be the best Knicks point guard over the course of a full season since Stephon Marbury in 2004.
Oh, Jesus, that's nearly...
Stephon Marbury is good. Mm, yeah. Like, there were a lot of things about Stephon Marbury that were very bad, including various incidents in trucks and late-night Ustream recordings, but...
old NBA Twitter heads remember clearly, yeah.
When Stephon Marbury was
gasoline involved
being,
in that?
Yes, it was Vaseline. When Stephon Marbury was being benched by Mike D'Antoni after he took over,
mm-hmm.
YouTube wasn't really a thing yet, so Stephon Marbury went on a service called Ustream and recorded himself live for 24 hours in a row. Stephon Marbury invented podcasting, you guys. No one denies this. In any case, so yes. Jalen Brunson would immediately be the Knicks' best player, and there you can. I would argue that he probably hasn't. That he's got another couple of steps to go as a player in terms of his development. I think it's a defendable move. I think they need to get rid of Julius Randle. I think they need to open up more playing time for Obi Toppin. I think they've got they have some work to do. I think if they can re-sign Mitch Robinson to a reasonable contract, they should absolutely do that, especially since I think Detroit is going big game hunting for DeAndre Ayton or bust. And so, look, there's a...
I need Detroit to finish the job there. I need him not in Atlanta. I need Detroit to go ahead and lock in that sign and trade for Ayton. I cannot have him.
Why would you not want to move some combination of Capella to get Ayton?
Capella's a better player. Ayton. Let's start there. Capella and Trey are tight. Capella's older. Capella has legitimate NBA things that we can point to as, like, this is a really good thing to have.
You are underrating DeAndre Ayton.
I'm not.
Absolutely underrating him, and you were wrong. And
look, I love the horn sets as much as anybody else, but a big who doesn't love contact is not for me. And Trey and Capella.
Wow, DeAndre Ayton soft is the take from Chase Thomas.
He doesn't do... I have no interest in guy... Like, he might change. He's still super young.
Okay.
Like, he's not... He's just not my kind of big. Like, if you're like, you have two types of bigs now, where I either want a Rudy Gobert, Clint Capella type, or I want a Bam Adebayo type. That's it, and that's all I want. And anybody else don't have any interest in what kind
of.
Yeah,
you wouldn't want a Joel Embiid type or a Nikola. Jokic.
Those guys you'll never find. Like, those are one in a bit. Like, those are so.
They'll never find
Mr. Positive over here. Jeez.
They just don't like Joel Embiid is a unicorn. That is one where it's like we're going to see a Joel Embiid every like 15 years.
A
unicorn
like...
that won't ever make the finals.
Oh wow! Hold on, I love Joel. Like, I'm a big Joel guy, but. It's an insult to Joel to say that Ayton could be anywhere close to Joel. I just don't think that's a thing.
Ayton absolutely has it in him to be a better player than Clint Capella.
I don't think so, because Capella knows who he is, and I don't think Ayton is at the age where he's ready to say, hey, I'm a fourth or fifth option, and I need... Like, I think that's part of the issue in Phoenix, where it was like part of where he had that renaissance last year was he was just a rim-running defense-first guy who never shot
he
the...
He was already better than Capella in that role.
I don't think that's true. Pete Capella is still better. But I've seen a lot of good Capella. A lot of good Capella.
Pete Capella sounds like a water. like a mineral water brand.
Who the hell is Pete Capella?
Pete Capella. I love Pete Capella.
Oh, Pete.
Yeah, Pete Capella.
You were like, oh, Pete Capella.
Yeah.
You know, reliever for the Phillies in 1986.
There you go. Chuck speaking it. Of the Phillies, calling up Mark Capella
stretch
today.
Big for shout the Rockers.
You know what? Good for him. Cause
I know.
He
Mark Capella's back in the bigs?
Yeah.
Really?
Because he was supposed to be the guy.
He left baseball. And yeah. Bang, yeah.
Okay, didn't he come back either right before
last year.
Or right after the pandemic?
Right after, I think.
Okay. Yeah, because he was, you know, out of Stanford, was supposed mm-hmm. to be the guy, and
he just had injuries, right? He just blew his shoulder.
It was injuries, and then I think kind of, you know, mental.
I was gonna say, did he have yips? Was he a yips guy?
I
don't remember.
So. I think he did. It wasn't Rick.
No,
Ankiel
I think you're thinking of Ankiel who had the yips.
No, I know Ankiel did, but I thought Appel had something. I know there was a lot of pressure of the number one pick, and he walked away from base in the injuries and stuff like that, but. Yeah, no, he was, because I think he went top three back-to-back years, right? Because didn't he get drafted by someone in the top three, and he went back to Stanford, and then he got drafted number one by the Astros? Am I right?
As a draft guy, I got nothing. It's like I'm at the methadone clinic reading Keith Law of mock and
here's all you need to know, Bob. Four Tennessee Volunteers in the top 200. You love to see it.
Hey, Chase, mm-hmm. How many College World Series championships?
That's enough. A sport where the best team does not win more often than not needs to reevaluate their playoff system.
I like the chaos. It's a wild
why?
Time,
why?
That's
why?
Not the point
you were at home in a super regional.
So were the last other two. Like Arkansas
also,
was.
Oh,
Arkansas
by the,
was, and UCLA was before that.
Oh, by the way, despite the fact that there is an all-SEC College World Series final.
It's not. Oklahoma's not there yet. We're not including Oklahoma yet.
Jokes, facts, Chase. Mm-hmm. Jokes,
all right. Mm-hmm. All right.
Facts.
All right.
Out the door.
Bob is like getting some SEC. Like
I'm just saying, like in a, just real quick, in a sport that has so much parity, but always circles back to the SEC. Watch Tennessee make a run to Omaha next year.
Yeah, we went to Omaha last year.
The worst here on the podcast today. Okay.
I mean, Tennessee baseball is a juggernaut that's not going anywhere. People forget. Everything's cool. We're fine. The Hawks, though, they did not make a trade for John Collins where it was like, oh, he's getting moved before the deadline.
I know. I messaged you guys.
Why do you hate A.J. Griffin? Why do you hate him? He is the son of a former player, Adrian Griffin. Why do you hate him?
Well, he doesn't play, which is a problem. We already have a wing who has high upside that doesn't play because of injuries. Like, that's who's turning 25 this fall. Yeah. So, it's really just, I respect them just throwing darts. They're like, all these Duke wings can't work out. Like, one of them's going to have to work out. Cam, Jalen, and now AJ.
One of the Duke wings is going to work out, but anyone who went to Gonzaga is damned for life, I guess.
Yeah, you would bet on the Duke kids over Gonzaga kids every single day
it's
of the week.
True. That is my Coach K is a fraud codicil, so that's true.
But I think it's interesting. I wrote about it yesterday for the Substack, sportsrenaissancemand.substack.com, but I wrote about, like, why Schlenk and the Hawks are in such a weird spot. Like, I talked about Capella, there's nothing you can do, because if you move Collins, you're going to have to do a mini rebuild, because you're not going to get the same ready-to-win-now value, and I think that's what they're finding, where it's like, you'll see the DeJounte report, and it's like, they're not giving up DeJounte Murray for him. No. So, you're going to have to...
There's a report this morning that Spurs want three firsts for DeJounte Murray, and
no one's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's doing that.
If I were the Knicks, I would do that before I would sign...
he's not that player. He's a good player.
He averaged 25-8-9 last year.
Three first rounders, you're a first team, second team All-NBA guy. Like, if I'm going that many consecutively or something like that, you got to be first, second team. You got to be one of the eight best cards in the league.
25, 8, and 9 last year.
I like DeJounte. Can't do it. Can't do three firsts. Can't do it.
I would give up if I were the Knicks. And the choice is sign Jalen Brunson.
How do we get back to the Knicks? I was voicing my frustration about the Hawks, Bob. I was voicing
The Hawks are in a very tough place because they have to both reconfigure the roster, get good value, and not piss off Trae Young. And there aren't a lot of, like, NBA trades are not, okay, I have this good guy who kind of doesn't fit, and you have this good guy who doesn't fit, so why don't we exchange them and mm-hmm. we'll both be happy. That's not the basic structure of NBA trades. It's going to be tough. They need to move Collins. They
but see,
they
the thing is, why? Collins, if you look, he's a success story. He is someone that getting drafted 19. Everyone around him is on different teams or out of
Wake
the league
Forest,
now.
Another like Jake LaRavia, another Wake Forest guy.
So. Yeah. Jeff Teague now a scout for the Hawks. So, yeah, Wake Forest U up here and or down there.
We're all about the Demon Deacons here in Brooklyn.
We love the Demon Deacons. Oh, yeah. You want a fun fact about the Demon Deacons, Bob?
What?
Where do you think they rank in enrollment among the 130 FBS schools?
First?
Last.
Oh.
Very small school, Bob. Very small. Okay. Small school, but then the Tim Duncans of the world still find their way out of there. Beautiful campus.
I mean, you could play the most prestigious conference in America, but, you know, whatever.
Not anymore. College basketball runs to the SEC now.
I think the Hawks...
Andrew didn't like that.
The Hawks...
Offended.
In retrospect, the Hawks making the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago was...
A fun summer, man.
Canary in the coal mine.
Right.
Canary in the coal mine moment.
Do you remember that Knicks series?
I have no idea what happened. I think it sped up their timeline in a way that possibly was not good. Because now...
sped up their timeline before the season anyway, because they signed Gallo, they signed Bogey, they already did that. Like, that was the goal,
right,
is they sped up the timeline.
Now they have to move all those guys. Yes, Andrew.
As somebody whose team had a sped up timeline, and I've noticed this with the Celtics. When the timeline is sped up and you aren't prepared for it...
Bad decision.
And when the timeline is sped up and you don't do anything about it...
Wait, are we talking about Hayward or Kyrie here?
I'm fine. I'm going to go therapy about it. Mm-hmm. I'm fine. I still hate Danny Ainge, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's busy. Danny Ainge is going to screw up Utah.
God, I can't wait either.
I just can't wait to see how they handle this uniform stuff when the merch sales are
the
horrendous and they just have
good.
To keep. Yeah, huh?
The main court looks fantastic. I think the jerseys might help, but man.
I did some research. It actually is 5 years until a team can officially do a rebrand.
Yeah, this will be okay. Oh, is it?
Like
is it just? Mm. Is it the league or is it because of? That Nike is the outfitter because the Browns went through the same thing.
Well, they might just do that where it's like they can't officially rebrand, but they still wear the throwbacks more often than not.
That is absolutely what they're going to do.
Some NHL team did that. It was either NHL or NBA. I think it was the Jazz because they wore like some throwbacks when they were with Adidas and everybody loved them. And then they...
I don't think it was the Jazz. No, it was another team that... I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the team.
Okay. Because, yeah, we're on the same track. We're just trying to...
The Browns...
Jamie.
The mini did that.
Jamie.
They wore the color rush uniforms.
Yeah.
And then the Rams, because they had to wait 5 years.
Oh, the Jaguars did that with like the two-tone helmets, didn't they?
Yeah, okay. So I think it might have been the Jaguars I was thinking about because everybody hated it.
The UPS uniforms.
Oh, God.
The UPS Jags logo they did in the rebrand.
And it was, which I didn't think it was bad. It wasn't terrible. But yeah, it was just, the Browns.
Two-tone helmets were a mistake.
The Browns were just... It's one of the most iconic uniforms in the NFL.
Yeah, and they just look terrible.
And it was just like, no. Like, you've got to, in a way, and I don't know if you guys saw the Nike Major League Baseball collection, that's the Off-White collection.
Mm-mm.
Like
cream? Hey, are we talking Off-White?
I'm talking about the Off-White Virgil Abloh Off-White collection that he does.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Is it good or bad?
It's effing terrible, Chase. I was not a fan. I was a fan of the whole Nike Major League Baseball marriage at first. And then my boss in Tacoma, we were talking about it because he's a big baseball fan. He's like, I hate it because I know what's coming. And I'm just like, oh, baseball uniforms are going to be cool. And he was just like,
no.
He was like, Nike is going to Nike. And I said, they'll be fine. They'll be cool. And when I saw the All-Star uniforms from last year, I sent him a message. You're right.
Yep.
Like, it's terrible. Like, they're just so bad. And it's hard to enjoy the game. Like, the City Connect uniforms, there's maybe been one good one.
The White Sox one.
Okay, two. White Sox, but I was going to go Marlins with the Sugar Kings.
The Marlins Sugar Kings.
I think that's really, really good. But yeah, it's just, it's all bad.
I miss the Marlins pinstripes.
The Angels one is bad. I don't like
the Angels one. Is like a knockoff of a. This isn't a Disney movie about angels in the outfield.
Yeah,
but it's a direct to DVD from the guy who played on Seventh Heaven.
Somehow Tony Danza and French Stewart are still in it. It's really weird. Yeah.
How is Tony Danza in it? He dies in the movie. Spoilers.
It's implied.
What do you mean it's implied? Did he not just die in the movie?
No, in Angels in the Outfield.
Is he not an angel in the outfield?
They imply that he's going to die later on.
Right, like he had like stage whatever cancer he was smoking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But he wasn't actually dead on the field.
I just imagined him and Tony Danza in the outfield.
Speaking of janky baseball movies, I'm totally dating myself here, but did you guys ever see the movie with Gary Coleman, the kid from left field?
No.
About the San Diego Padres?
No.
No, what the hell is that? I know my baseball movies.
Jamie, go to IMDb, look up the kid from left field.
Oh, 1979. God.
1979, Gary Coleman at the height of his star powers on Different Strokes.
Which is ironic that you said the height of his star powers, by the way.
he was a TV star in 1979.
But you said the height of his powers.
Yeah, I did. I didn't even realize.
He's got the good. This is the vintage Padres logos. And look,
yes,
like
they wore the 1978 uniforms. The story, Robert Guillaume, who you may all know from Benson or other fine television programs, or Sports Night.
Yeah. They really named him Jackie Robinson in this movie? Jesus Christ.
Yes, they did.
Did they really?
Okay, so Gary Coleman plays the son of former Padres superstar played by Robert Guillaume. And the team is losing and not doing well. And through dint of luck, Gary Coleman gets named manager of the Padres. And so the joke is, here is a very, very small child actor managing a Major League Baseball team, and hijinks ensue, and eventually Robert Guillaume becomes the actual manager. It's like Robert Guillaume is sort of a disgruntled with and disillusioned by and rejected from baseball type. I don't know if it's supposed to be Dick Allen or Kurt Flood or whomever, but like, that's the vibe that Robert Guillaume was supposed to have in this paper. The kid from left field. I'm sure you can watch it somewhere on the internet if you want to catch up on that. But it does have the classic 1978 mustard and mud Padres uniform.
That's interesting.
That there is wild.
Andrew!
What?
Your pick of the week.
The kid from left field.
Andrew's going to watch this movie.
No, you know what the sad thing is I probably, like, in the next, I would say 48 to 72 hours, I'm going to find, because I'm off on Sunday, so, like, I'm gonna find it. Here's the sad thing. I'm gonna find
it
today. God, Bob.
I will log on to LimeWire.
I've got so much TV to catch up on. I'm actually gonna start The Boys tomorrow. And so because I keep seeing stuff on my timeline, and I'm like, damn it, I'm gonna start the show tomorrow. Everybody, shut up. Honestly, I'm just ready for a sports break. That's what I am ready for. Because for a four-sport town such as Detroit, Atlanta, and New York, actually, okay, we'll count college as the fourth one, since you know you guys couldn't handle a hockey team again.
That's not what happened, but okay.
But yeah, no, I just
Washington, by the way, which is weirdly like named after the city getting destroyed in the Civil War, which was
The Flames and then the Thrashers.
The Atlanta Flames Fire logo, though. Fire logo.
And yeah, they went to Calgary and actually became something of themselves. Congratulations. No, I'm just ready for a break. I'm ready for, you know, to focus on just non-sports stuff. Just get back to normal society. Watch, marathon some shows. Barry, The Boys. I think when Better Call Saul actually ends, that's when I'm going to begin the series.
Yeah, I haven't jumped into it. I've watched like 1.5 seasons and I couldn't get into it, so I kind of let it go. But
I watched the first ever episode because I love Breaking Bad. I watched the first ever episode of Better Call Saul. I was interested, but then I also had, like, I was going back to school at that time, so I'm like, I don't have time for this. But yeah. Also, Stranger Things, part two of season four.
I haven't done it. Yeah, I haven't watched any of the new.
I think you'd enjoy it. I think you'd enjoy it.
It looks fine. I'm sure when I have a need, I'll get into it. I haven't done it yet. On my list.
Also, need some convincing on something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about getting a Nintendo Switch. Yay or nay?
This is not my area of expertise.
I was going to say, this is not me either. I'm not a gamer.
Yeah, I'm not a gamer, man.
Cool.
We're sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry.
Thank you for your service.
Well, I'm sorry, Andrew.
According to my 12-year-old niece, it's a lot of fun. So.
Okay. Well, I'll take her opinion for it. So.
Yeah.
Glad you guys could not be of use for this.
I'm sorry, Andrew.
Yeah.
Bob, what's your pick of the week?
I don't know. Let's just leave it. I think I've done enough.
I know what you
can
do.
Talk.
Vacuums with long cords. Like, it's a good vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
That thing can go, man.
I've been doing some vacuuming today.
I have a
Dyson stick, but that's for upstairs. That's the downstairs vacuum.
Oh, you got a downstairs vacuum is one of my favorite. Like, that is the most bougie thing I've ever heard.
That thing is 20. Look, there was a Dyson stick that someone just left on the corner for free. So I took it. Those things are like not cheap. They're not.
Could have been Peter Dinklage.
Right. They are on. It was sitting there in Brooklyn Heights on the corner.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, free vacuum, score. So now I have an upstairs and a downstairs vacuum. And that thing there, that weighs 25 pounds. So I'd rather not be constantly hauling it up and down the stairs. So two vacuums.
Mm-hmm.
Two vacuums.
Okay.
Classy.
I like it. My pick of the week, Bosch Legacy. Finished it yesterday. What a show. I want to spend so much time with the Harry Bosch world. Like, it's a great world to live in. Titus Welliver
is so
great.
What is a Harry Bosch world?
A Harry Bosch world.
Bosch is a show that is enjoyed by a certain brand of media person, of which Chase is one of them.
Chase was trying to hold it in so much.
What does that mean, Bob?
Is it like a super pretentious show or something?
No.
No, it's not. That's the thing.
I think he's doing a complexion joke.
It's a white guy show. I mean, granted, the guys I know who like it are all Caucasians, but...
Yeah.
And they all happen to work in media. I'm just saying... I'm saying... It's a police procedural that is beloved. I'm not exactly sure why I've never watched Bosch.
It's not even a procedural. You get the whole 10 episodes, and it's not one episode, and they start all over the next time. It's a whole series. It's season-long. Let's solve the case. It's so good. Titus is fantastic. I love Titus.
Yes. We all love beloved character actor Titus Welliver.
He's fantastic.
Never heard of him.
He's the guy from Lost. He's the man in black from Lost.
He's in like 100 different things.
Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff.
He is often the assistant to the head cop doing cop things also.
He's an Irish guy in Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, he's running around with John Hamm in the town solving
crime. I forgot he was in the town.
Oh, that's him. Okay. Yeah. I know who you're talking about now. The town. Underrated heist movie.
Here's my anti-recommendation. Late at night, a couple of nights ago, as you guys know, I was watching the new Doctor Strange, and it's awful.
You were so upset.
It was just, I was like, is this supposed to, Sam Raimi did all of his Sam Raimi. It was like, what would happen if, like, Bruce Campbell was in a Marvel movie with really bad CGI?
Okay, so I took it as Sam Raimi was doing a kind of a love letter to the horror film, to the 70s, 80s horror film genre in this movie.
Right, but...
But you hated every single moment of it.
It was just so bad. It was so bad. I will not... All right, everyone listening, spoiler alert, earmuffs. Mm-hmm. I'll say this in 10 seconds. The only part of Doctor Strange Into the Mouth of Multi-Madness that I liked was when John Krasinski got blown up. That was cool. That was awesome.
And he... Oh, by the way, so there's a... And Chase would know this. Mm. So Brock Lesnar is a wrestler. He once told him...
Earmuffs off. We're done.
So there was a moment where Heath Slater, he was a wrestler, and he was going through this whole thing where he was going to get fired if he didn't do X, Y, Z, you know, whatever. And so he was like, I got kids. I got all these kids I got to take care of. And Brock Lesnar goes into the ring one day and he's like, dude, I'm a father. I've got kids. I completely understand. You got to do what's best for your family. Like, everybody knows where this is ending up, which is he's going to get a wrestling move put on him and it's going to be hilarious. But Brock just does such a great job taking you on this ride. And then he just says, I don't give a S about your kids. And then he gives them an F5. And basically, once again, spoiler alert, Wanda does the same thing to him. And I'm just over here like, look, I'm in the movie theater and I just went golf clap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, this is? Yeah. It's like, that was good. Mm. That was good.
Everything else, utter garbage. Like a 70s horror movie. You cannot smoosh that together with the Disney machine that is Marvel and make it...
But apparently they were going to make that rated R. They were so close. They were so close to making it rated R, but Disney was like... You know, Mickey was like, oh, you can't do that. No.
You can't. Oh, no. We're not going to see Mr. Fantastic's dong in this one. The thing that, like...
Oh, my God.
The thing about Doctor Strange as a comic book character that makes him work is that he is, and they sort of hint at this at the movie, is that he is such an egotist that he continually screws things up because of his belief in his, because of his own sense of self-regard. And then things go horribly wrong and he goes, oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to learn to not to do that again. And then he does it again and again and again and again.
Did you watch the Marvel what if series?
No, I could not.
Okay. Because they touch on that.
Right.
Yeah. Also, Chase is probably looking at us like, okay, nerds.
Sure. I'm full on done the not David Chase, who's the Martin Scorsese of that world. Like I'm out. Have not watched a Marvel anything in forever.
Also, can we talk about how Martin Scorsese was like, oh yeah, Netflix is gonna do all these great auteur films, and then Netflix is like, hey yeah, hey Jamie, $300 more or $300 more million for the Stranger Things stuff, okay? Yeah, good. Oh, cool.
That's not his fault though. He had the right idea.
Thank you. Hey, are we gonna do the de-aging for Al Pacino again? No? Oh, okay, yikes. Cool. Thank you.
Andrew's doing a wow.
He's doing a bit. All right,
I need an assistant, by the way. Yeah, I really do. I'm so
busy. We all need
busy.
Assistants. Look at it. Bob is just the... I love it. Bob, at Bob Saeta, anything we should check out for you at the day we anywhere else this week?
Trust the process. It'll all be done soon.
There you go. Andrew, what about you over at the Detroit Free Press?
Got a fantastic Q&A I did over the last week with AEW lead announcer Excalibur. That's coming out on Tuesday, and I will be over at Blood and Guts watching some AEW wrestling on Wednesday night.
There you go. There you go. Andrew, Bobby, Silverman, thank you as always. I greatly appreciate it, and I will talk to y'all next. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Sports Reporters, who have indeed reassembled on this Monday morning, June 27th edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Go check out all the other great programs all across our network. Insight with Chris Van Vliet, Spinsters with Haley O'Shaughnessy and Jordan Liggins. We got Road Trippin' with former NBA stars Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson. All kinds of great shows all across our platform. So go check it out today, BlueWirePods.com. Thank you, as always, for making the Chase Most Podcast part of your daily listen. However you listen, whether it's via YouTube, whether it's on your Apple Podcast app, your Spotify Podcast app, or you're just your preferred podcast player. But if you do listen via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please make sure that you leave this show a 5-star rating and a review. It helps other people find the show, and it helps this show continue to grow. And that would be great. You can always email the program for any mailbag stuff or anything along those lines at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. New content all week long coming to you here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, so look out for that. But yeah, there you go. Chase Thomas Podcast, new week, and all kinds of great new content coming your way. So keep it locked right here on the Chase Thomas Podcast on your podcast player. So make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss any future content from me. Read me, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. All kinds of content all around my stuff. So there you go. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.